and Amy Stevens, and I think that was not good for her political career. But that's not the only issue. And when we come back, we're going to talk with Ellen Roberts about another issue. I like Ellen Roberts. She's independent, fair-minded, and she was thinking about running for U.S. Senate. Maybe we can persuade her to reconsider. But she kind of ran afoul of some Republicans who hold the hardest hard line on the abortion issue. And that includes the morning after pill, IUDs. And somehow Ellen Roberts, before she could even take off on this campaign, got a little twisted on that issue. And we'll talk to her about it.
We now return to the Craig Silverman Show. News Talk 710, KNUS.
I can see clearly now.
I bet the view is beautiful. 8 miles outside of Durango, where our special guest in Craig's Lawyer's Lounge is located, Senator Ellen Roberts, proud graduate of CU Law School, class of 1986. You know, Ellen Roberts talked about running for the United States Senate, and then she came on my buddy Dan Kaplis' show, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But we have awards to give out every week, and this award is apropos of this conversation, as you will soon hear for yourself.
The Craig Silverman Show presents the best call of the week.
You're on the air.
On News Talk 710 KNUS.
And it was with my buddy Dan Kaplis. It was a caller named Andy, and the subject was about abortion and Planned Parenthood. And the undercover videotapes of top officials at Planned Parenthood talking about selling body parts on very developed fetuses. And it disturbed me. It disturbs a lot of people. And, of course, Dan Kaplis, who's 100% pro-life, he was disturbed. Andy, the caller, isn't quite as far as Dan. But like me, he, too, was concerned about it. Here's a taste of that call.
First and foremost, you know, I'm a pro-lifer, and so that is fundamental to me and whoever I'm going to support. And so I've been looking for the answer on Trump. I understand he's been pro-choice for a long time. This switch may just be a matter of convenience. I have real concerns just looking at his MO overall, real doubts about whether he would truly appoint conservative justices, pro-life justices, who are right on Roe v. Wade.
So that triggered Andy's call as follows.
Can he win the nomination as a pro-choice Republican, or at least a presumptively pro-choice Republican? I think the answer to that is the no-brainer of the millennium, this or any other millennium. Andy, you're with Dan Kaplis, 710 KNUS. Good morning.
Good morning, Dan. Hey, you know this whole thing with this Planned Parenthood, I mean, you know, you almost can't even talk about it. It is beyond reproach. I mean, I can't believe that 100% of the people in this country haven't risen up and done something about it.
Done, you know? What?
I mean, shut them down.
How?
Mean, you know, they should be shut down. And I am not I don't have some of the same beliefs you've got. But I tell you what, when it comes to this is a no-brainer. This is black and white.
And I agree. I think he meant to say beyond dispute instead of beyond reproach. But you get the idea. I, too, am offended by what Planned Parenthood is doing. And I think it's extreme. And I also worry about if they're selling little baby body parts, then they're probably encouraging these women to have an abortion so that they can make money off of it. That's sick. And as I understand it, there are laws against that. But I'm not holding my breath for the Obama administration to do anything about it through their Justice Department, because Barack Obama is an extremist on this issue. Heck, he authorized, killing babies born alive. So he's radical. Diana DeGette is radical. Lots of elements of the Democrat Party, including Planned Parenthood, are radical. And I don't like it. But when everybody on this radio station says, they are extreme, and we can't, what are we going to do about these extremists? Then you have to say, well, what about you guys? Aren't you extreme when you say no to IUD funding, no to the morning after pill? I think part of the reason that most people were offended by these Planned Parenthood exposés is because the fetuses were so far developed. My attitude is, after the first trimester, once the brain is formed, especially once the fetus/baby starts to feel pain, to me, that's a dividing line. And I know other people disagree, including my pal, Dan Kaplis. The conversation kept going like this.
Anybody right now who's truly pro-life should be seizing on this and talking about it all the time. Every one of the GOP candidates at every level, including the presidential level. We as individual citizens need to be talking about it. We need to be, every time one of these pro-choice, quote-unquote, pro-abortion candidates appears anywhere, we need to do our part. And respectfully, politely, but firmly, as Krauthammer suggested, pin them down on this. Is this okay? Do you oppose it? Should Planned Parenthood's funding be cut off over this? Do you support taking the life of a 7-pound baby in the third trimester? Should it be legal to take the life of a baby, to kill a baby during labor and delivery? And pinning people down on that.
And see, those are all beautiful questions from a smart lawyer, Dan Kaplis, but for the extreme pro-lifers, don't they have to be prepared to answer the other questions? Like, are you going to take away funding for IUDs? Are you going to legislate against the morning after pill? Are you going to seek to cut, to eliminate in vitro fertilization clinics? These are the tough questions for people on the other side. Meanwhile, most of us are in the middle. I was watching Megyn Kelly, who I think shares my point of view, and she was talking about how most of the American public oppose abortion on demand after the first trimester, but the majority of Americans also support a woman's right to choose during the weeks following her learning that she has been impregnated. This all is a way of initializing the rest of our conversation with Senator Ellen Roberts. Ellen Roberts has thought long and hard about this issue. She went to law school. She studied Roe v. Wade. She's a mother herself. And it comes up as she serves in the legislature. And we've replenished your hot tea with lemon and gotten you some more Irish whiskey. And that may help you talk about these things, Ellen Roberts, because it's not easy to talk about. And you had occasion to have a conversation with Dan Kaplis in which your words came out and weren't necessarily well received by all the Republican Party. What do you think as I play that call of the week and you remember your conversation with Dan Kaplis? Ellen, are you there? Oh, no.
Yes, I'm here. Okay. I'm here. Sorry.
Well, that's all right.
I put it on mute. So here's what I think. I think there's two different things going on. One is, what does pro-choice mean? And so when Dan Kaplis, when I was on Dan's show, he came with the, so you call yourself pro-choice. Here's where I got myself into trouble is, as a woman, young woman and growing on up, and I'm in my later 50s now, I thought I was pro-choice in the sense that I didn't want abortion completely outlawed. And that is because I think women need to be able to make their own decisions. Obviously not in a vacuum. They need to be supported by their family, by whomever they got pregnant by, their faith, their community. That needs to be a decision that the woman is supported in, no matter what her age is. But I didn't feel like government should be the one to say what the woman had to choose, which is no abortion. I stopped calling myself pro-choice when I became a politician, not to play a game, but because those who identify as hardcore pro-choice started saying to me, based on some of my votes, that, no, you're not pro-choice enough. And I thought, okay, well, the pro-life people, such as Dan, would say I would never fit in their category. I had primaries over the social issues, and people would say, no, you're not pro-life enough. So then the pro-choice people said, you're not pro-choice enough. So I stopped trying to use that any label because I was like, put me in box number three because I am more in the middle of the road, but I feel like those of us in the middle are not squishy people who can't make up our mind. We see more nuance than maybe some on either end of the spectrum. Maybe we've had family or friends, or maybe somebody's actually had the personal experience of having to make those difficult choices of how to move forward. So I feel very principled myself. I did in 2011 in a spirited defense of a Republican resolution on religious liberty. As I tried to talk to my Senate colleagues on the Democratic side of the aisle, I did refer to myself as pro-choice, a pro-choice Republican woman. It was the one time, I think, that I slipped, and I said that. But my point to them was, you can have a broader viewpoint than just the hardcore pro-choice, that where even religious liberty is something that is a phrase that you can't say that you support. So I was trying to encourage them to look broader, to see that that there are nuances even with religious liberty, and we should respect an individual's right to come to their own decision. Unfortunately, because I had said that time in the debate, and the Democrats were not happy with my position and support, strong support of the religious liberty, they brought that back up alongside what I said on Dan Caplis' show about not being pro-choice. And unfortunately with Dan, I didn't really get to go into the full context that I'm not trying to call myself pro-life either. I accept that both ends of the spectrum do not accept my point of view, but it doesn't mean my point of view changes. Put me in the third category.
And it doesn't seem to work for politics. Maybe representing Southwest Colorado it works, but it seems to be if you're running for the United States Senate or the United States presidency, the Republicans won't accept you unless you're 100% pro-life, and then the Democrats won't accept you unless you're totally accepting of their version of pro-choice. Let me ask you about these Planned Parenthood videos that have surfaced. What's your reaction to what you've witnessed?
I think it's horrible. And I would say that I think Planned Parenthood has painted themselves in a corner that is going to be very difficult to come out of. And I have tried to, again, offer to my colleagues who view themselves as very pro-choice to try and bring this to a more realistic conversation. We live in a time where now we have 3- and 4-dimensional ultrasounds available for women who are pregnant. I mean, we encourage people to read to their unborn child or fetus. I mean, it's always so loaded. Which word did you use, unborn child or fetus? I think that's a mistake. I think most Coloradans and most Americans and hopefully most human beings are aware of the intense bond that exists between a mother and her unborn child. In the early stages of pregnancy, though, I do think that consistent with U.S. Supreme Court law, there is a carve out there for a woman to say, make a choice. But as you say, as the pregnancy progresses, it gets more and more difficult to say that the woman's right to choose always trumps that of the fetus or the unborn child. And as science and medicine have advanced, as we save unborn children or fetuses earlier and earlier, I think we all become aware, much more aware of what we're doing here. And I found it really interesting. I was reading a column that Planned Parenthood OBGYN was referencing the Center for Medical Progress, the videos, and she said that these are not baby parts. And I don't know how you can, I mean, that's going down the wrong road as far as I'm concerned to say they're not baby parts. I mean, we use the word maternity, and maternity is motherhood. We talk about playing music, reading again to an unborn child. I mean, in the same article, the woman says that saying baby parts is a calculated attempt to, and here's a big word, anthropomorphize an embryo. Mm-hmm. Well, if it's not, anthropomorphize means to attribute human characteristics. If an unborn child or a fetus isn't human, I mean, I don't think you can, you can't call it a rock or a stick or a, you know, a llama. I mean, it just seems to me that they're going down the wrong road in trying to convince people that they're right. And I don't know if it's because healthcare has gotten so expensive. I don't know what has caused them to get into this practice, but I do think the revulsion that so many people have over it is going to hurt Planned Parenthood greatly.
I agree. At the same time, Colorado has seen success in eliminating the need for abortions with morning after pill and IUDs. Now, some people will say that's an abortive patient. It's the same thing. And a lot of that comes from a religious perspective. I knew you before you breathed, that sort of thing. And once sperm meets egg, it's inviolate. It's a human being. And I always go to this example. If there was a fire at the in vitro fertilization clinic and I had time to save the elderly security guard or 24 Petri dishes, I think I'd save the security guard because that just seems like the right thing and the good common sense that God put into me. I could be wrong about that, but what about IUDs and the programs Colorado has to, in effect, have birth control, but some would say birth control after the fact?
Well, I would have supported the LARC bill if it had come to the Senate floor, and that was something that the left skewered me on. I had not said I was going to run for the U.S. Senate. I said I would think about it, and that was in response to a question asked by a reporter at my local paper. That seemed to unleash all sorts of attacks on me, and I guess I didn't do a good job in explaining myself, and I didn't have the resources to combat, you know, the various media efforts to take me down early.
See, I wouldn't blame yourself, Senator Roberts. I wouldn't blame yourself because I think you're caught in the middle like most Americans, where you really disapprove of abortion after the first trimester and maybe even earlier than that. But if you support the morning after pill or you wouldn't make it illegal, then you're considered persona non grata by many members of the GOP. So it's a tough situation, but I want to beat yourself up over it, and I would urge you to reconsider maybe even running for the U.S. Senate because I think you're making a lot of friends, at least with me, as we talk about it. I also learned from talking in a pre-interview with you that as part of your position in leadership, you've traveled the world and you have some observations about what's going on. I hope...
...inc.com.
From the Colorado Business Roundtable Studios, this is News Talk 710, KNUS, Denver. Now, back to the Craig Silverman Show, News Talk 710, KNUS.
Oh, we're having a good time in Craig's Lawyer's Lounge. I've started drinking some of this Irish whiskey. Senator Ellen Roberts got me going. She's a great guest. Next week, Karen Steinhauser and I are going to talk about old times. We worked together for a long time. And capital punishment, big in the news. Dexter Lewis, I went to the opening statement. It was deja vu. It brought me back to when I prosecuted a Denver death penalty case, except I looked around and I said, wow, everybody seems so young in here. And, of course, the Arapo County case, the Aurora Theater trial goes on, and it will be even more interesting next week. Don't miss Karen Steinhauser, my old CU law classmate, my colleague in the Denver DA's office. She's going to be in Craig's Lawyer's Lounge as we celebrate Colorado Day. We'll get right back to Ellen Roberts. She can probably talk about whether capital punishment will survive the legislature. I guess it depends on the way we vote. But I hope you survive, and I hope you survive a long time. And if you're thinking about retirement, you're smart. But you have to have a plan. And you've worked hard for all these decades. Why have you worked so hard to accumulate a nest egg so you can retire in comfort, maybe even leave some of it for your descendants? How are you going to do it? Are you just going to put it in the stock market and hope for the best? Or are you going to have a plan that protects your money? Look, you've been a winner in life. Why not preserve your winnings? The way to do it is by getting a hold of Brian Denton and Legacy Wealth Designers. It's not just that Brian Denton's a great guy. He is. He's trustworthy. He's smart. But he also has the latest, greatest technology called Asset Lock, which takes a lot of the emotion out of it. You know, emotion is not your friend when it comes to the stock market. We're near all-time highs, but what if there's a collapse? Will you get out in time with asset lock? You know you will, because it'll save you from devastating losses. It's a portfolio tracking system, and when I say that, you too can track it. You can see where you're at and how close you are to getting to those exit points. Brian Denton's an easy guy to talk to. Asset lock's easy to understand. Go to the website, LegacyWealthDesigners.com. Click on the asset lock tab. You'll find out so much more in about a 3 or 4 minute video. I think it'll make sense to you. Ellen Roberts makes a lot of sense to me. Maybe it's the Irish whiskey. Maybe it's the fact that I feel like I'm on the front porch of her log home 8 miles outside of Durango. But I like you, Ellen Roberts, and I understand that in your job, you don't just stick around Southwest Colorado. You've gone all over the world as part of the leadership in the legislature. Tell us about your travels and how people view the United States these days.
Well, I have had some great opportunities to go around to different countries, and that's through the National Conference of State Legislatures. NCSL is their acronym, and they're actually based in Denver, and they've got a D.C. office, but they have an international relations program, and they often send state legislators to different countries around the world to work with legislators in parliaments, typically it's parliaments, to try and do what we call legislative strengthening programs. It's an effort to share the what we believe to be the good benefits of a democratic nation, and that's with a little d, democratic. But I've been to Algeria and South Africa, Mozambique with NCSL, and then I just recently had a separate trip to France. And
I wish we had more time, but we're coming up to a break. But you and I had a good conversation getting ready for today's interview, and is it fair to say you're concerned that the United States is not held in as high a regard as it once was, and people are looking for leadership from the U.S. that's kind of sorely lacking under Barack Obama?
Yes, and that's what I heard most recently in France. And I think it also, people are looking at the inroads, literally, that China is making into the continent of Africa. They're not just doing it for good neighbor relations. They want something in return, so China is definitely a big player. But I think that in the Middle East right now, there is a sense in some of the European countries that, and some of our allies, traditional allies in the Middle East, that we are not playing a leadership role. And what I heard
we're going to have to leave it at that, Ellen Roberts. I'm sorry about that. If I hadn't drank the Irish whiskey, I would have managed the clock better. But I hope you'll join us again. And you are delightful. Thanks for being in Craig's Lawyers Lounge.